World events make this a rather remarkable time for us to meet each other. I say this because I believe it to be true of all meetings taking place in these uncertain times. We wonder at how reliable those around us are. Whether at the airport, in line at the grocery store, or riding the metro, we look to those around us and we wonder, with the poet Theodore Rothko, of those so close beside me, which are you? Or perhaps more accurately, who are you? We wonder, who can we have faith in? Who can we believe in? Whom can be relied upon? We want to feel, we want so desperately to feel and to know that somehow there are still some amongst us who are not so cynical and hardened that they have lost all hope, lost all sense of compassion. And our ability to see in one another, or perhaps also to truly and deeply see each other, rests, I believe, on our capacity to summon a sense of generosity. And so as you and I embark upon a week of getting to know one another, I thought it might be a good time to look a bit at the spiritual component of how we express generosity. And generosity in this sense, I don't mean has to deal with how much you put in the basket or plate as it's passed, but I'm speaking this morning of a generosity of spirit. For a generosity of spirit is a key component and ingredient to any religious community. We are so frequently in this culture, in this country, asked to look at things from a perspective of scarcity. Think about it. There is only so much time, so much energy, and so much goodwill to go around. We have to limit what we are capable of doing. I worry deeply that in limiting what we are capable of doing, we might also, in the process, be limiting what we are capable of being. Limit what you do, but not who you are. We close ourselves off to what could be because we convince ourselves in so many ways that we can't afford to do otherwise. I can't afford to linger longer in conversation with someone who needs my time because my schedule is so tightly packed. I can't take time to exercise today or care for my body because my work is more important. And I can't, in spite of my desire, pause to pray or to journal or to light a candle because all things spiritual are fit in only after everything on my to-do list has been checked off. And when does that time arrive anyway? These thoughts go on and on in our heads as we increasingly see ourselves as a precious natural resource that is tapped and might soon run dry. Which brings me to a story about my own personal generosity being pushed to the limits, about discovering within myself a generosity I wasn't sure I had anymore. A story about a difficult time in my life. You see, I arrived here from the colds of New Mexico, where I was just on vacation with several friends of mine that I went to college with. And this is a college story, so it seems rather appropriate to have just been with some college spirits. I was doing a semester abroad my junior year in college in Munich, Germany. And at the time, you will have to use your powers of imagination, I had braids about to here. And I think I was the only person of color of the 20 people from my college that were on this adventure to Munich. And it was a wonderful trip in many, many, many ways. I got to see things that I still fondly recall. And as an art history buff, there was nothing quite like walking into many of the museums and seeing artworks that I had only seen in books before. But I also had a difficult time, particularly in Munich itself. As I walked the streets and in and out of the trains, I noticed that frequently I was being stared at by the local people, by the Germans. And I began to feel very uncomfortable. Like from the moment I left my host family's home in the morning until the moment I returned to their home in the evening, I was constantly being watched. What had I done? Why did I deserve such scrutiny, I wondered. In fact, my friends along on this trip tried to make light of it, tried to joke with me about it. We would sometimes play the game, count how many people are staring at Shauna when we step on the subway. But there was also a way in which they didn't get it. They didn't understand why I felt so alone, even in their company. They didn't understand why these looks made me feel not just uncomfortable, but a little bit fearful as well. And so finally, one evening, probably halfway through the 6 months that I was in Munich, I was riding at home, riding back out on the S-Bahn to my family's home, which was a good 20-minute ride, maybe 30-minute ride on the train out from Munich. And I was somehow on this train by myself at about 10:30 at night, and I don't know quite what I was thinking, even in that regard, but there I was. And I noticed as I had my nose in a book that these two gentlemen across the aisle from me were looking at me and kind of pointing, and I thought, oh no, this could be trouble. I'm by myself, I have no recourse, my German's not very good, I don't know where I would go for help. My mind immediately went to what could go wrong in this situation. Finally, one of the two men, after kind of the two of them talking back and forth and looking at me, he sort of leans in my direction and asks me in German if I speak German. I say, ein bisschen, just a little. And he comes and he looks again, he kind of scratches his head like, oh no, now I'm gonna have to summon up some English because he realized that that's what I would speak. And he tried to formulate a sentence in his head, I could see the gears moving. And he finally leans over and he says, how do you get your hair to stay like that? And you can imagine my relief. He wasn't about to hurt me, but actually just wanted to know, wanted to understand something he didn't understand, wanted to genuinely meet me where I was and for who I was. And it occurred to me as I left that train and boarded a bus in Neubiberg, in the suburb where they lived, that I almost didn't have that encounter with that man at all. I almost didn't have that encounter because I was so closed off. I was anything but generous. I had made so many assumptions about who he was and about how he would interact with me that I had packed away my capacity for kindness and openness. And what a loss to me it would have been to have never had that interaction. It is a remarkable truth, my friends, that our attitudes, our expectations toward our experiences can color them dramatically. And so I ask you about your life. Are there moments when generosity called you out of scarcity thinking? Have you seen times when an offer of generosity on your part has encouraged it, in fact, inspired it in others? Have you discovered that when you enter a situation with a foregone perception and conclusion of how it will go, that somehow, some way, life with a capital L almost always finds a way to surprise you? Approaching living with a generous heart does good things for a spirit. For there can be no doubt that we walk away from instances when we have given all that we can, when we give as much as we can, and when we are as open as possible, we leave those situations feeling content. For we know that we have been the person we feel called to be. We have offered what we could to make things be as well as they might. I was thinking recently that I'm not sure that we can ask for much more than that. For we don't get assurances from life, you and I. We don't get to have things turn out as we plan. But we do get to try to live in harmony and concert with what we believe. We do get to extend ourselves and our hearts. I was recently reading about a new film, and I was reading the interview with this Danish film director, Suzanne Beyer. And she was saying about her film this one sentence, which seems directly connected to what I'm telling you this morning. She said that in the movie, she said, I wanted to talk about forgiveness and the way that love demands immense generosity. Love demands immense generosity. We are in the midst of many demands on our hearts and on our times, on our spirits. But so is the demand of love. It seems not such a great gesture to spread one's arms, to embrace those around us. And yet it is a bold and courageous act to do so. I encourage you in the days ahead to look well and to think hard about how you might be generous with your spirit. for your person on the metro who just wants to know how your hair stays that way, might be lingering and waiting for you to offer yourself. So for my prayer for all of this morning is that we might create a beautiful melody by bringing together our conviction that compassion and love are worth every demand made upon us. May we live out our faith by being generous of heart, of time, and of talent. So may it be this day and in the days to come. Amen.